It's time for All Hands on Tech.
Climb on board as we explore all the amazing things happening in Nova Scotia's tech sector. Each episode, we'll chat with local experts to uncover the secrets of what makes Nova Scotia the best place for collaboration, innovation, and creativity.
All Hands on Tech is proudly produced by Digital Nova Scotia, the industry association for Nova Scotia's growing tech sector.
Welcome back to All Hands on Tech. I'm Claire.
And I'm Ashley. We are so excited to officially be kicking off our third season of All Hands on Tech. And today we're coming to you from a brand new studio.
That's right. For season three, we have partnered with longtime DNS member This Is Marketing to record All Hands on Tech out of their beautiful downtown Dartmouth state-of-the-art podcasting studio. And so it only made sense that they joined us on our first episode back.
We are so excited to learn more about This Is Marketing, a local agency that offers everything from podcasting to brand management, product packaging, digital marketing, and so much more. So let's welcome Neil Steven, This Is Marketing CEO, into his own studio. Thank you for being here and for having us.
Welcome to This Is Marketing. Yeah, right on.
We're so excited to be here.
I'm happy to be here most days.
So. That's good. That's that very important.
I think so, yeah.
That is good. And you know what? I love this office because, well, one, it's a great office, but it was unsuspecting. It was above, you know, TD.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't have thought of it. At the side, you walk up and you got, first of all, the snacks. Amazing.
We love it.
There was a dog, all sorts of nooks and crannies, a full studio, another one behind us. So great spot, I got to say.
We do a pretty good job of keeping that quiet. So thanks for telling some folks.
Yeah. You wanted to gatekeep, but there's none of that here. Sorry.
Yeah, no, we're terrible, honestly, at promoting ourselves. We just live in our clients' worlds, and we never really tell anyone that we're here or that we do these things. So it's exciting to have you guys here and to be using the space.
Yes, and I'm a Dartmouth girly. I live here, so love downtown Dartmouth. So happy to be here. Before we get into it, why don't you, for listeners, you know, who maybe haven't heard of This Is Marketing before, what's your founding story and what do you guys do?
Well, good question. There's a tea coming my way right now. Thank you very much, Kirsten. Breaking the third wall of audio. I don't know if there's a third wall or not. So, you know, we're a company called This Is Marketing in downtown Dartmouth. We're coming up on 9 years in business, which is hilarious because I had never really intended to own a business or anything like that. We started just by myself as a solopreneur, helping people with their marketing. And it was just sort of friends, you know. I had a job, and in the evenings I would help out, a person who, actually the very first client we ever worked with was a company called Addo in Volta, when Volta was on Spring Garden way back in the day. In its very first spot was above the mattress company. I think, I can't remember what the mattress company was, but anybody who's been around for a bit will know what I'm talking about. That library, it was across from the library that didn't yet exist on Spring Garden.
Sleep Country there?
Yeah, Sleep Country, yeah. That's right. Yeah, it's like we're like...
That's my neighborhood.
Yeah, like Lulu's there now, and Duggar's, that building, whole building just was torn down and then rebuilt, right? So that's how it started, was just sort of helping people in the evenings, honestly. And one person would say, oh, well, you should talk to so-and-so, they need help. And I was like, oh, sure. Just really kind of liked helping. And after 5 or 6 months of doing that, it kind of became it was a realization that, okay, I guess this is like a full-time thing now. So we started the company, and I had to name it something. And what I had found was that for those months, one of the things when you work with small brands or small businesses, they really get nervous about marketing because it's usually not their wheelhouse. They're usually, really great at whatever it is that they do. Mm-hmm. And so the marketing is always like the moon to them. And so I found myself often saying, like, relax, this is marketing. It's not rocket science. And so then when I had to give the company a name, I was like, oh, this is marketing. That's fun, because I always end up telling people that, like, it's just marketing, you know? But now, like 9 years later, the company's name is This Is Marketing. And it sounds like, and we're like an actual agency, and there's like a lot of people working here, and it sounds like we're really impressed with our own work. But it's not at all how that name was meant to land.
I love it. Own it.
So that's back in the day, you kind of asked about the origin story. It kind of came from that, just trying to help people. And then one thing kind of led to another. The reason I decided to really do it and open a proper company was I was inspired by the Ivany Report. So that's a document from a few years ago now. But it basically, if you know anything about Atlantic Canada, you know that we've for a long time been doomed by demographics. And so the Ivany Report really illustrated that very well. And one of the points it made was not only do we need a lot more small businesses, but we need a lot more small businesses doing well. Mm-hmm. And you know, if we're going to stabilize the economy and be here as a province or as a region 50 years from now. So that really spoke to me because I had been doing a lot of sort of corporate-esque or behavior change marketing for government and that sort of thing. And it's really not as quite as rewarding as like meeting with a small business owner and saying, hey, like, I have an idea that might change your life, you know, mm-hmm. really. And if you can help them go from 2 employees to 4, that does change their life, you know. Totally. So it was really rewarding. And when I read that, I thought, that's a place that, you know, I could help. And that's where it started for me, was like working one-on-one with small businesses, and just really loved that. And then what happened is I worked with clients long enough that they started to grow and their needs diversified, like the needs changed. And so then I needed more help. And then all of a sudden we started growing, and yeah, anyway, now we're here 9 years later.
Usually, yeah, honestly. Yeah.
So that's the backstory.
And how many staff do you have now?
There's 12 of us now, with a couple part-timers, and we've got like a really great network of partners that we work with too. Mm-hmm. We're very fortunate for sure.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing.
That was inspirational.
Yeah. We do have some more questions for you, but first we would love our listeners to just to get to know you a little bit better. So we have some fun, quick hitters.
Oh, yes. Rapid fire?
Yes.
Bring it on. Okay.
Okay. We're going to really start off strong here. So the website, we did our research. Well, mm-hmm. Ashley did her research. It okay. says that you're a gardener.
Oh, yes.
Do you have a favorite plant?
Yes, of course. I'm a gardener.
Ashley thought maybe that was a silly question, but I was like, he must have a favorite plant.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And what is it?
Impatience. I love impatience. They're beautiful, and they can be hard to grow, and they bloom, and then they die. And you kind of look
the
like
drama.
Yeah, well, it kind of looks like the flower bed that a week ago looked amazing looks crappy now. But then a week later, it pops again. They rejuvenate themselves and they spread. And impatience would be the ones.
Wow. Okay.
I know I'm not a gardener because I have no idea what that is.
I know,
so
same.
I will be Googling that.
That's why I was like, can you tell a gardener? A non-gardener wrote that question. Do you have a favorite plant? Okay. Okay, what do you think is better, having a brand tug at your heartstrings or lead customers straight to the checkout?
Both things are equally valuable at different times.
Yeah. These are real hard questions.
Yeah, that actually is a hard question, yeah. And it's a good question. It just depends on where that customer is mm-hmm. in a cycle, right? Sometimes you're talking brand, and sometimes you're saying buy. It just depends on the scenario. It's everyone's favorite answer from a marketer. It depends.
Yeah. Yes, of course, of course. Or maybe what the brand is. Although I do find the Super Bowl reminds me every year that any brand can pull at the heartstrings. They really pull at all the stops, you know? It's like Bud and it's a bunch of puppies or whatever. Yep. And you're like, how did I get here? So, okay, this is a Dartmouth question.
Great.
Would you prefer to relax along Lake Bannook or hike through Shubie Park?
Hike through Shubie Park. Yeah.
Was that a tough one for you? You had to think a little bit.
Well, I was trying to think where I'd relax along, but on the opposite side, there's a beach there.
There's
I can't
a beach,
remember
yeah.
what it's called. So that's probably where I'd go. But no, Shubie's so cool, and there's all kinds of hidden little spots in Shubie. So mm-hmm. I do the hike.
Good ducks.
Good yes. ducks.
There are good ducks.
I always do the dog park loop.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
And if you're not from the Halifax area,
yeah,
you should go to Shubie Park the next time
for
you're
sure.
in Dartmouth.
It's a beautiful spot.
It is.
Okay, so we heard your founding story, but why don't you walk us through some of the work that you guys do here at This Is Marketing and maybe some of the services you offer? I guess I kind of did do a little bit of an intro at the beginning, but yeah. What is some of the work that you guys are currently working on?
Sure. We're a brand-centric marketing company. So what that means is we will take the harder but more fruitful path. We're interested in building brands for the long run and not necessarily for achieving tomorrow's sales target. So obviously we want to achieve the sales targets, but if we're doing so in a way that is detrimental to the viability of the brand, we're going to counsel against that. You know, so it can be more challenging to be a brand communicator, but to me it's more rewarding, and it's really about creating long-term value. So when we work with clients, you know, we do not thrive in transactional environments. That's never good. If you want a transactional environment, you know, like, you're going to be really frustrated working with us, because we're going to ask you questions that, like, the amount of times we hear, "Oh, nobody's ever asked me that before," is normal. Mm. Like, that's the norm. That's kind of how we know, like, we're on our way. So, you know, we're brand centric. That's the first thing to sort of understand. So we're about helping you tell an authentic story that differentiates you from everyone else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, most brands, everybody thinks about a promise of what's your brand promise. And we always think about that in terms of creating a promise, making a promise, and then keeping a promise. And keeping a promise for a smaller brand is super easy. It's the making of the promise. So how do we tell people, right? You create a promise. It's about understanding, how are you unique? What is it about your brand and your values that are different than everyone else's? And how do we articulate that in 7 words or less, basically? And that's one piece of the pie. And so you create that promise, but then you got to, like, tell the world about it. And most businesses don't have the resources to do that. And so they can have a really authentic promise that all kinds of people should know, but they can't make the space to actually get it out there, distribute that promise so people hear it. But then on the keeping of the promise side, it's very easy because they're smaller brands. As brands grow and there's more nuance and complexity to the business, the creating a promise stays the same in terms of the effort. The making the promise is a lot easier because they got money, right? They can buy your attention. They can produce a podcast series, or they can buy ads, or do 100 other different things. But then keeping the promise is hard because they have 500 employees, and who knows what someone's going to do every day, right? Or if they try to change something, it can take months for that change to be understood by everyone and implemented. Mm-hmm. So we like to approach this work as though we're partners in articulating your brand and then helping you manage your brand. So that's a very long-winded answer to your question, but that's sort of our philosophy. And what sets us apart from others is we'll tell you no on things, mm-hmm. not because we don't think it might, you know, not because it wouldn't work, but because it's not how we believe your brand might show up, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, right?
It does, yeah. And it's important sometimes too.
Yeah, yeah. It's you know, we all know what it's like when we see a brand do something that's off-brand. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh man, that's so, like, not them. Yeah, that's what I always say, like, our job is to be just out ahead of the client, building the guardrails to keep them on their brand road, right? Because if we're not out there building it, they'll go off the road. And as business owners, it's very hard not to do that because there's opportunities everywhere.
Yeah.
So you got to say no.
And yeah. Sometimes, you know, you see what other people are doing and there's this drive to,
oh my goodness,
you know, grab people's attention, but it's not always the best decision. Yeah. So I think it's very respectful to give them real advice and not just kind of let them go rogue because you're thinking of the long-term impact.
Yeah, exactly. And it just hurts them long run, right? And if when you don't speak up and say, hey, no, like, that's not how you'd actually show up in this scenario, mm-hmm. They might get the short-term either sales or adrenaline rush or the ego bump that they want, but they're only hurting themselves. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to be in those conversations.
I'm sure. Okay. So, well, you talked a lot about brand and the importance and like a lot of, it's a big part of your focus, but you totally do a lot of different things here. You offer a lot of different services, one of them being podcasting. Yeah. As we're sitting in your podcast studio right now. So tell us a little bit about kind of why you consider getting into podcasting, where you see the future of it, you know, are you looking to grow it? Is it something, kind of guess, how's it going so far and what do you see moving forward?
Okay. So I love podcasts. And I've been, you know, when I first got into this business was like 20 years ago now, and I was like explaining to people what a podcast was. So this is back like before the iPhone existed. And so like iPods existed. And so you could have a podcast on an iPod, and people barely knew what iPod was, right? You know, but I was just telling people, oh, these things they're podcasts, they're tremendous. And I didn't know it was going to take like 15 years for that to catch on. I thought it was like, oh, this is great, you know? So I've always just loved the medium. I think voice, like the sound is so intimate, you know, like we're actually quite big believers in radio here, you know, like buying radio ads, even though it's like jump the shark. It's like that day has passed, but people still listen to the radio, and part of it is because there's an intimate, you know, auditory relationship there. So I've always loved the medium. During the pandemic, we took over this part of the building that we're in, and we punched the wall and we built this space because I just had a belief. I've been watching the space long enough. I just had a belief that people need to be able to make their own content now, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a point where it was like the gatekeepers was just the technology. So podcasts were great, but not a lot of people could produce one. And that's now gone away. There's very few barriers now, and everyone can do it. So our thought was, well, let's create a space that people can rent, they can come, they can learn how to record their own podcast, learn how to edit their own podcast, these sorts of things, and kind of be on their way. You know, I guess a big shout out to the guys across the harbor at Podstarter, because they kind of took that and like made it their whole business while I was running a marketing company. So like, I think they're doing a version of what I wanted to do, and I'm like super happy for them. So what we kind of just thought was like, okay, well, let's just make this space available for folks. They can rent it, they can use it, and certainly our clients do as well. So that was kind of, I just always wanted to have it. You know, it was kind of a thing where I felt like, yeah, this is totally a great medium. And what I didn't necessarily anticipate was video podcasts. So, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, earlier than that, but it really started to take off 3 or 4 years ago was the video version. And really in the last 2 years, even 18 months, video has become such a key component, right? So like we've got a camera going for this podcast, but you guys usually don't, right? So what video does, as soon as you add a camera, well, now you have auditory content for your social channels, but that doesn't translate well to Instagram and Reels and Facebook and all these things, right? But if you have video of the podcast, now all of a sudden you've got the mediums mixing together and helping you create a variety of content across platforms. You know, like this is Ross Simmons' dream. I don't know, you know Ross, you must know Ross,
he was
right?
On our podcast.
He was. That's right, he was. Yeah, I'm a listener of the podcast. So, you know, like I didn't really see that until like a couple of years ago. I was like, oh yeah, video is a pretty big component of it, right? So I really just, more and more, it's getting to the point where, you know, if you don't have a podcast, like people look at it and think, okay, so I'm going to make a podcast and then I'm going to produce these episodes. I'm going to put them out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and these sorts of things. And it's like, yeah, kind of. But actually, no, like you're going to use it for all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a foundation of a communication strategy. Well, that's right up our alley, right? So more and more, like we're talking to clients and podcasting is something that I'm thinking of all the time now as a foundational piece of an overall strategy because it just gives you such rich content. You know, the company I think is doing this the best in the market is Storytime Studio. I don't know if you've met with Erin Trafford or not, but she's built something from nothing there that like really plays to her strengths and her network strengths. But they actually help you think and plan out your whole strategy around podcasting. And so like, you know, that's not what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to create the space for people to be able to do those things. But like, I would never call myself a podcasting expert because I'm a marketing and branding expert, you know, and podcasting is a component of that. It's an important one, but it's a component. So there's lots of great people in the city and in the province who are doing these things. We're happy to have a space where people can create. But yeah, like I don't see us as experts. I just love it.
Yeah.
That's a very good, long answer. That's what I do is long answers. Sorry.
No, I love it. It bodes well for podcasts. So,
fair enough. Yeah.
So I guess your clients then, you know, if they're coming to you and I feel like there's a lot of people right now that are like considering getting into podcasting or think that it might be good for their business. But maybe they're thinking, oh, you know, there's just so many podcasts out there, or I don't know, just what's your advice to maybe, or what do you think are the biggest benefits? You kind of talked about it already, but to getting into podcasting.
Well, the number one thing I would say, especially to like entrepreneurs and small business owners, is it's okay if you don't do a podcast.
Yeah.
and it's okay if you don't really do social media or really whatever you're trying to do, just like good for you.
You can't do it all. Yeah. Let's just start with that.
I want them to hear that, honestly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've worked with enough people over the years. Like one of the things that I've been trying to communicate to people over the last couple of years is that there is an epidemic of guilt amongst small business owners and entrepreneurs who aren't like communications inclined, right? They don't show up well on camera. And that's just like a thing. A lot of people don't show up well on camera, or you put a microphone in front of them, they freeze. But they're amazing entrepreneurs in other ways. Mm-hmm. And we have an environment now where that's glorified. The ability to do that is glorified. Mm-hmm. And many, many marketers will tell clients, oh, you need to be on social media. You just need to be on social media. Just be yourself. That's really not fair advice.
Yeah.
And what I've witnessed firsthand in meeting after meeting after meeting is like, oh my God, you feel terrible that you're not doing this. I can see it. You feel like sad and embarrassed, and you feel like you failed your employees, you failed your family because you're not posting on Instagram every day, or you don't have a podcast. So it's a real problem, actually. Mm-hmm. So that's why my first answer is don't feel bad if you don't, mm-hmm. you know? But if you are inclined, like, why would you do it? Or there's so many podcasts. Yeah, there are. There's lots of podcasts, but you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to be the next giant podcaster. It's about podcasting solves a lot of problems. It's great for search engine optimization. It's great for giving you social content in general, email marketing content. It can really form a foundation for your brand, right? So you can not only have a podcast where you talk and tell people what you think, but you can do partnerships. You can bring people onto your podcast, right? Well, now you're growing your network. You're cross-pollinating audiences. And these are important things to do in the digital space, right? So podcasting, you know, you don't need to be, I'll say, Joe Rogan. There's parts of Joe Rogan I like and whatever, but I don't trust him on anything. He just kind of riffs, and I think he takes some very important subjects and just like riffs on them. So I'm not like a bro like that, but, I think a lot of people think like I'm a failure if I don't have this giant audience. And right. It's like, you know, if your podcast has 15 committed people who download it and they're not your friends and family, well, you're bringing value to those 15 people. Plus, you now have an asset that you can repurpose across your social channels, across your email marketing, all sorts of ways. So there's lots of reasons to jump into podcasting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you can't get there, please don't feel full of guilt because you're doing the best you can. And there's lots of ways to get where you're trying to go that don't involve podcasting too.
Yeah. And podcasting is a lot of work. Like the actual podcasting is like the recording, you know, it's the easiest part. Then 100%. To market it is the hardest part. But it does bring, like you said, a lot of assets that you can then share, right? Like it's not about who listened to the full 1 hour. It's about like the impact of all of the graphics and the reels that have come from that, right? So, so yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people feel the need to do everything, like people who maybe aren't in marketing themselves, especially, you know, like they feel obligated to do everything, but we always say it's better to just do things well.
Yeah.
Yes. So like focus on what you can do well and what you have time for and what you can commit to, because doing everything poorly is not going to be worth anyone's time, you know,
at all. It just detracts from you. It hurts you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Let's talk about tech and the role it plays in your operations.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any new emerging technologies?
Like, finally.
Are there any new emerging technologies or trends you're implementing in your work here at This Is Marketing? And is your team fully embracing AI? What are the vibes around AI here?
I kind of do these impromptu things where I'll say, can I get everyone's attention? When I have to give like an update or on something. And I was doing that and can't remember, but at the end, I kind of threw in like, and I'm not afraid of AI to the team. And everyone kind of looked at me, they all started laughing at me, which is very normal around here. But yeah, what I was trying to say was, because I could tell amongst the staff, like they were avoiding kind of talking to me about AI.
Oh.
You know, because I get annoyed by AI. And it's not that I'm annoyed, like it's inevitable, right? Like I get it. But what annoys me about AI is that I'm not optimistic about where it's going to go. And as someone who didn't have AI for his whole career, and now it's here, it's very frustrating because I had to learn all of these things.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know? And so it annoys me.
That's fair.
But sometimes I forget like, oh, like I'm a leader, I guess, and people are watching how I react to things, right? So I had kind of caught on to that. So I kind of threw that at the end. I was like, oh, by the way, like I'm not afraid of AI. And what I was trying to say was, you can talk about AI with me. It's fine. And it's kind of sad that I had to say that. So I've been conscious of it since. And we've actually been employing AI since it started to emerge, you know. So like Midjourney, we've been using Midjourney. And there's like Midjourney, but we've been using Midjourney for a long time now since it came out, basically. We got a subscription and we pay for it every month. It has accelerated our ability to conceptualize things for clients, like so much faster. Saves a ton of time, saves them money, allows us to show them more options. So it's really, that part's really great. We've engaged it on the writing side, the creative writing side, of course. You know, like one thing that I think people don't touch on all that often is like, it's happening anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So you can lament and obsess over your Facebook or your Meta headline, ad headline copy, right? Like crazy. And you can come up with 10 of the best ones you think, right? And then you put it into Facebook and you have them run. Well, Facebook's taking all that stuff and they're taking everybody's interactions with your stuff and they're making wholly new fresh ads anyway for you based on AI. So like it's already happening whether you want it to or not. So now we'll go, okay, so let's get 50 headlines from ChatGPT and then, you know, so like Manik, our writer, he'll do that sometimes. He'll just get a whole bunch and we'll sort of go through it and pull it out. Okay, this makes sense, this doesn't. So it's like, we're not afraid of it. I know like Brian on our team, he leads all of our video work. He, you know, I saw him a few weeks ago. We did like a talking head and there was a really distracting element in the ceiling behind them in kind of the far ground. And he just AI'd it out. He had the rest of the ceiling kind of just take over where that element was and it got rid of the distraction. It looked great. And I was just like,
that's handy.
That would have been like to do that 4 years ago would have been hours and hours and hours and hours of work, right? So, you know, there's no doubt that we use it every day here to varying degrees. We're not clear necessarily on where it's all going. Mm-hmm. I'm not optimistic just like for our species about where it's going. Like I'm not, you know, right, like right. You know, it's like, I don't know if you guys know the movie Idiocracy. But if you don't, you should watch it or check it out.
Let's go watch it.
But the premise is essentially a guy, the U.S. military has figured out how to freeze people. And so they pick the dumbest guy. They do IQ tests of everyone in the military and they pick the absolute dumbest man. And he agrees to be frozen because he's an idiot. And then fast forward, he wakes up, I think it's a couple hundred years later. Anyway, he becomes president because he's the smartest guy. You know, and so that's the you know, anybody's listened to this that knows Idiocracy is like, oh, I've seen that. But the premise is not that far off. Like, we're losing the ability as a species to do things. Mm. And are we gaining abilities? Yes, sure. But like, you look at the pyramids, like someone on the planet knew how to build those and we lost that knowledge, right? And so when you give up your brain to what a computer tells you, you lose the ability to learn things and to remember them. I went through this. That's the thing is like, AI is the 2024 version of Google, right? So like I remember a time, and your older listeners would remember a time when you needed to figure something out, you could not Google the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had to like go to a source of information. And
well, I remember doing school projects and going to the encyclopedias.
Yes,
like I was doing research at the library. Like there was no Googling. Yeah.
So now Googling, like it took effort to learn something back then.
Mm-hmm.
And the likelihood of you remembering that would be higher because you had to contextualize to get more information. You probably had to learn three or four things that weren't the answer before you got it. Well, that got replaced in my lifetime with ask a question, get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that had a change on everyone's life. And AI is like that. It's exactly like that. It's changing everything about the way we live.
Yeah.
And that's what Google did. And so it's... you know.
There's a lot of examples of that, you know?
Yeah.
Tons,
well,
yeah.
And you know what I get worried about is just losing confidence in writing because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. Or you think, oh, AI is like better at writing than me. Like, I don't know. I've spent my entire career as a writer. So it's kind of scary to me sometimes that I'm afraid that I might lose my confidence in writing just because it's so quick and easy.
Mm.
And so many people use it. But I do think that like the human advantage there is still, we bring different values than AI could, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
I don't know what it's going to look like.
But it's scary to me though, that it's like some people's like first, like they won't even try it first. Like they'll just plug whatever they need written into AI and just have it generate it without even trying to do it first. So on to your point like losing the ability to even do it. Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
You know? And then you add on top of that, you think, okay, so these generative models, that the data that they're pulling from, okay, so like most writing is bad, right? So no, but that's just reality. Like, as a writer, you get that, right? Yeah. Like actually, you get that. So like, most writing is bad until you get to the third or fourth draft.
Totally.
Right. Well, all of that is getting put into these writing models or these data models. So like, where it's pulling from and how it's writing is good to a point, but I have not yet seen innovation necessarily come from the writing side of things. There's other innovations on the AI front that are like, holy crap, that's going to be a game changer, right? So like make a PowerPoint presentation about this, and then it goes and it does it, right? But it's just using all the things we've already thought about and written about to do that. It's not giving us new.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I wrote last year, I thought, and I don't know if I put it on LinkedIn or something, but I just said like 2024, you know, we are going to see the absolute peak of copywriting. And it's because every copywriter in the world is like, holy crap, yeah. AI is here for my job. I'm going to be the best. Like I'm going to write, I'm going to work harder and harder. And some of the stuff I'm seeing, I'm like, man, there's some really good writing happening right now. Some of the best creative writing I've ever seen is coming out into the marketplace now. And I can't tell if it's AI supported or not, but yeah, I don't know. It's a wild, wild west, but we're trying to embrace it here. And recently my staff found out that, yeah, I'm okay with AI.
Okay. Embracing it, not completely optimistic, but okay. So kind of still on the digital front, but you know, if you go to your website and you look at the work that you've done, you serve a wide range of clients from various industries. So I'm just curious in your experience working with them, like how many would you say are operating with a digital first strategy? And then on the flip side, you know, how are you helping them navigate that shift?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's a whole lot more now than before the pandemic.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know, that not saying anything new here, the pandemic really accelerated by years the digital adoption. And I think government did a very good job of standing up and saying, okay, let's create an investment opportunity so people can get support to make this rapid adaption to digital. So I feel like there's some basic ground that's been sort of traversed now. You know, a lot of my clients know how to get into their Google My Business, which
good start. Yeah. Good start. Yep. Strong.
But
but
shocking how few did before, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So, you know, like I remember the first couple weeks of the pandemic doing like boot camps with a whole bunch of business owners and like showing them on screen, like, go here, click log in. And most of them had never even logged into their Google My Business. But all of a sudden, the hours of which they were going to be open were critical for people, right? So they needed those to be accurate and they didn't know how to change their hours, right? So like that's how bad it is, or was. You know, bigger companies don't have that problem, but a lot of small businesses do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen that get a lot better, like a lot. But it's taken a long time. And part of the whole AI thing is when you see technology that solves a problem and is easy, and then you watch business after business after business after business avoid it, you know, it teaches you something, you know? And what it taught me was that, oh, like just because it's there and just because it's easy doesn't mean that the business has the brain power or the ability and time or any number of other reasons why they can't implement. You know, and sometimes they have to be forced. And that's what COVID did. It really forced a ton of people. So AI is here now, but you're going to have a boatload of laggards who do not adapt and do not evolve. And we're going to lose a lot of them because of that. It'll be too late by the time they realize. So, you know, we're not afraid of it. We talk to our clients about it. But I don't think the digital uptake is, for a lot of the clients we serve, it's not there. You know, they're very much smaller companies and they're very much focused on doing the best job at making the product.
Yeah.
That is the place where technology does show up in my clients' businesses more often than not, is in how they build their products or in how they fulfill them.
Mm-hmm.
And actually marketing themselves, it often is absent.
Right.
Which is ironic, you know, it should be front and center, but digital first is often not the case. Our bigger files though, yeah, they're all digital first and we love that. But yeah, oftentimes we're holding hands, walking people down the digital aisle.
I think that's not, you know, super surprising given the landscape of, you know, Nova Scotia. And I think it's something that is changing slowly. But I think it's just been in recent years that COVID definitely was an accelerator. And, you know, we do a lot of work with Tourism Nova Scotia and digital adoption. And that was like completely new and still is new to a lot of even tourism operators, especially in the rural communities. So a lot of work to be done there, but a lot of opportunity.
Well, I mean, shout out to Digital Nova Scotia. We we got quite a few of those grants, those digital adoption grants for clients. So I think of a company up in Ganesh, Lantern Hill and Hollow, probably the nicest cottages in Cape Breton.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I'm pretty objective. I know a lot about the hospitality space. They have the nicest, you know, one of the nicest spots. And we spiked their revenues.
Yeah.
Like night and day because they had just, their digital footprint was abysmal.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Like
just, I guess there's a website. I don't know. Are the linens clean?
Yeah.
You know, or do we get the soap? Are they like just perfection at execution of their business?
Right.
And then the digital's like, okay, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, we were able to come in on that grant and it was just a small grant and we just flipped the script and it was just like immediately they started seeing new leads. They were able to increase their prices. And then they just exited. They just sold it to Keep Smoky for way more than they would have, you know?
Yeah,
I can tie it right back to digital adoption and digital Nova Scotia.
Yeah, so that's crazy. We love to hear that.
Well, digital Nova Scotia really stepped up. It really did. And you saved a lot of people's bacon. Like you really did as an organization. I know you're a sector council, I guess, and technically, but nobody thinks of you guys like a sector council. Everyone that I talk to thinks of digital Nova Scotia as a critical piece of the business infrastructure now.
Wow. And, that's nice to hear.
That is awesome. Yeah. You know, and we saw a lot of growth in that time as well because there was such a need. So like our team, you know, 2 years ago tripled in size and it's been around for like 35 years. It's been the same size for so long.
Yeah.
And then just all of a sudden everything changed and we had to grow with the demand. So that's exciting.
So often that is not a challenge that's met.
Yeah.
But you know, DNS met it, you know, and your brand, I really like your brand too. It's really simple. I used to know who did it, but I can't remember now. So sorry, whoever did it. but it is a nice, clean brand. It's super simple, and you guys stick with it. It's not just aesthetic. It's the way you speak, the information you share. Brands are about action. They're not just about colors and shapes and stuff. It's about what you do. And Digital Nova Scotia always has itself in the center of what's digitally important in this province. And that's where we need you. So it's impressive, honestly.
Oh my God, some sound bites there. Popping our tires. We appreciate that. Thank you so much.
We really like those digital adoption grants.
Yeah. I was like, what's the motive here? Okay.
Well, kind of like playing off talking about COVID and the opportunities, but also the challenges that came with that. Now that we're in 2024, what are some of the biggest challenges that you're helping your clients with now?
Good question. You know, you guys gave me these questions before.
Like there's so many.
And I thought about them a bit. And I'm also like a real big believer in authenticity. And so I don't like to prep for these things too much. So I saw them and I kind of let it go. But like, you know, what are the biggest things that we're seeing now is how to maintain the digital infrastructure that's been developed. So when you don't really know what you're doing in the digital space, but you're forced to do things, which is kind of what everyone just went through. Well, then when you come out the other side, you're not really ready to take care of it, right? Mm. It'd be like being forced to buy a farm. And then once the craziness ends, you're like still stuck with a farm.
Right.
You know, it's like I wasn't really planning on being a farmer. and so I think there's a lot of folks that are stuck with digital footprints that they don't quite know what to do with and don't necessarily know how to maintain. So that's a piece of the puzzle, I think. I think that there's a... One of the interesting problems that I'm seeing now is just that there's no such thing as like truth anymore or like facts or like, you know, shared reality. And in that sort of environment, a lot of businesses and brands don't quite know how to show up digitally. Like they don't know where they ought to be, you know, and they feel like, I don't know if I necessarily want to be on TikTok. Isn't that owned by the Chinese government or something? And it's like, well, it's more complicated than that, actually. And it's an important platform. You may want to be on it.
Right.
But there's just so much information coming at brands and business owners now. You know, I mean, business owners and even like directors of marketing or marketing managers, the sort of people that sort of execute these sorts of things. There's so much coming at them every day. You're drowning in suggestions and tips and takes, and this is this
conflicting information.
Conflicting, you know. So I hear a lot of, I just don't know what to do.
Yeah,
I hear that way more than I used to. You know, So, you know, in some ways it's an opportunity because we have a pretty good sense of probably what you ought to do. But my heart goes out to these people because they're just, my goodness, like there's only so many hours in a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really it's a lot of information coming at you nonstop, mm-hmm. that a lot of which is conflicting, like, yeah. just like you said, you know? So what I tell people is the answers are on the internet. You don't really need me, but make sure that the answer that you found is from the last year, you know, that's the first thing I say.
Well, yeah, things change so quickly. So exactly. honestly, it's already yeah. dated at
so
that point.
So that's why I say it's got to be yeah. from the last year, and you need to find multiple instances of the same piece of feedback.
Yeah.
Then you can trust it.
Yeah.
So like if you want to, you're looking for a marketing strategy template, there's only about 10 million of them on the internet, right? But maybe you want a marketing strategy from the last year.
Yeah.
Because over the last 2 years, marketing strategies went from being a thing that people needed, and you might make one for a year or 2 years, that sort of thing. Any marketing strategy that's longer than 3 months at this point is, you know, nice, sure. But talk to me after 3 months.
Yeah.
Because I bet you're going to change your strategy.
Yeah.
Just things are so dynamic, right? So, you know, so with that example, I say, yeah, go find a template online. You don't need me to write your marketing strategy, but find one that is new and has the pieces that are, you know, you can find them in a couple different examples, a couple mm-hmm. different templates. Mm-hmm. So you have one that you trust, you know. It's, I feel bad, honestly, for particularly for small businesses, because they have to be in these places,
mm-hmm.
these digital environments, and they can't not be there for many of them. And it's hard to be there. It's hard to play in that space on a day-to-day basis and still run your business.
Totally. You know? It's a whole job.
Yeah.
It's many people's job. So.
Yeah. And for businesses that have enough cash flow and people, it gets to be someone's job and they hire someone, right? Mm-hmm. And that is like what we all think of. Oh, the social media manager is here, right? Mm-hmm. But most businesses in Nova Scotia don't have enough people to mm-hmm. have that. So what that means is there are thousands of businesses that really are struggling to show up in all these places that we all expect them to be.
Yep.
You know, so if you love a small business, maybe cut them some slack, yeah. you know, and tell them, hey, you know, like, it's all good. Mm-hmm. You know, I see that you're on Instagram and that's it. And that's cool. I follow you on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Yeah. Okay. We just have one more question. I'm going to kind of tie it back to what you mentioned at the beginning, but, I took this off your website. So you describe your team as a group of creatives working to create and maintain quality jobs in the Maritimes by providing affordable, reliable, and successful marketing strategies and projects, sorry.
Just a really easy to read sentence.
We love that.
Rolls right off the tongue.
Great web copy.
Now, you did mention the Ivany Report at mm-hmm. the beginning, but I'm just curious, like, why is that important to you, you know, to maintain those quality jobs here in the Maritimes? I'm just curious.
Because I'm from here.
Mm-hmm.
And until very recently, we've been doomed by demographics. It is very easy to be upset that people are sleeping in Parade Square. And it's very easy to forget that only a couple of years ago, we were closing hospitals. We were closing schools because we didn't have enough people. So in solving one problem, we've created a new one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's very personal to me. Yeah, I'm close to it. The leading politician on both subjects, both immigration and now housing, is a client. Mm-hmm. So the Minister of Housing is, you know, we work with him. I ran his campaign. So it matters to me. You know, immigration in 2015 was critical. And most people don't realize that, you know, immigration, those numbers, so then the amount of people that Nova Scotia can allow to move to Nova Scotia from outside of Canada is dictated by the federal government. And so up until 2015, we were really not allowed to get very many people here. We just weren't allowed. And so the governing Liberals at that point introduced the Atlantic Immigration Pilot, which changed the equation. You know, it made it possible to get more people here. And then I think in 2019, perhaps, it went from being a pilot to being a full program. And now we see the impact of that. You know, like the downside, yep, housing is a problem, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Are there recent changes to the international students, because they're trying to pull back to help with the housing crisis? So, like, exactly. That's another implication of mm-hmm. of that strategy.
Yeah.
It's give and take for sure.
Exactly. And then, but then there's another side of that. You say, so we're admitting less international students, but we've also changed the rules so that international students that are here can now stay and work in their profession and earn permanent residency over time, right? And it wasn't always the case before. So now we're not only educating these folks, but we're taking advantage of their education and helping, allowing them to help our economy. So that's a very long answer. Shocking. you got to be impressed with my consistency. But, you know, the reason that that's on our website is that, that's what we value, right? Like, I don't wake up in the morning thinking, how in the world can I sell more shawarmas? You know, like, I know Peter at Mezzo would be like, yeah, you do. And we do think about that, right? We do think about, okay, how can we help Peter? Like, Mezzo's a client of ours. So how can we help Peter and Tony and the crew there sell more shawarmas? Totally. But I'm also, and honestly, I'm more focused on how do we ensure that there's a market for shawarmas 10 years from now or 20 years from now, right? And these are the things that need to happen. We need more small businesses, and we need the ones that are here to do better. We need small businesses to go from having 2 employees to 4, or from 4 to 8, or from 8 to 12. We need them to grow, you know. So that's why it's there, because it's what we believe in. We want to, like, I've got 2 kids, and I want to pass on an Atlantic Canada to them that is robust, where they have all kinds of options, you know. And we're not going to do that by not acknowledging it, and we're not going to do that by choosing to work every day on things that don't bring about that reality. So that's why it's on our website, is we want to communicate to brands in the region that we're here to help you grow, and we want you to grow here. We want you to employ more people here. We want you to create sustainable quality jobs that give people an actual shot at buying a house and being able to contribute to the economy for the next 50 years. That's really like our passion. We love marketing. I always say that the ability to communicate is rare and it's a privilege. Most people kind of suck at it. And thank God, because we have a job because of that, right? But most people kind of suck at it. And a lot of people who are great at it kind of just roll with it and use it for their, you know, great, I have a good job, I make money, awesome. I think it's incredibly rare and it's a responsibility. So if you can communicate, if you're good at helping others communicate and tell their story, well, what are you doing to strengthen the places where you live? And so that's why it's on our site. We really wanted people to know this is what we believe. This is who we're trying to talk to. And it's been great because that's the type of people that we attract. You know, if you're really just wanting to push units and make cash, you're never hiring us. You know, we take one look at our website. It's like, oh, these, what's with all these plants? And oh, these guys, a bunch of hippies, to hell with that. And they move on. Great. We're not for you, you know?
Refuse to work with gardeners.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, again, like, it's a long answer, but it's really a very personal thing. So yeah.
Yeah.
We're passionate about it.
That's perfect. I love it.
I feel like that's a good note, an inspirational note to end on.
Yeah.
Kind of really wraps up the feeling of the company that you've built and like exactly what you wanted to build from maybe not from day one because you didn't mean to build it, but once you made that decision, that switch in your mind. Yeah. It's really nice to see that you've like stayed true to your values and created something around that. So
we've tried to. Every day is a challenge.
Yeah.
But yeah, we try to. So thank you.
That's awesome. So that's the end of our questions for you. So now, I mean, we want to open the floor to you for anything you have to say, any final words, anything you want to pitch.
Anything exciting coming up.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I guess so. You know, we've got a thing coming up in April. We just sort of we're in the middle of doing a test run of it now. We're calling it a timbership. So our company's name is called This Is Marketing. And
Tim.
Tim. Thank you. You actually got a TIM. About maybe 6 months or 9 months after I started the company, this guy named Seth Godin, who are the marketers that are listening will know that name. He wrote a book called This Is Marketing. Can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
Will
you bleep it out?
I don't know.
Swear that often. Well, yeah, I do. But, anyway, so he wrote a book called This Is Marketing. And he's like amazing. And everybody buys his books. And anyway, long story short, my SEO was fucked after that. You know, it's just completely, you search This Is Marketing, his book comes up.
Yeah.
Which sucks because we had the name first. But whatever. But it's a great book. And I actually totally recommend it. And it's ironic how well aligned his book is with what we try to do here. But anyway, it's a good book. You should get it. Anyway, so we started referring to ourselves as TIM, This Is Marketing, T-I-M, just sort of shorthand around here. and we're probably going to change the company name to Tim at some point. So we were thinking about how do we create a educational resources, because as we've grown, we've had to bring on more staff to do the things that our clients need. And it's kind of taken us away from working with those really small brands. And it's unfortunate because that was our roots. And now we're working with larger companies, like Meza is a large company. Mm-hmm. So we're working with them now. And this all kind of came, we used to work with Peace by Chocolate over many, many years. And so like they had a meteoric rise and we had to scale quickly to sort of keep up with them and to be able to serve them. So we kind of found ourselves one day like with an agency, you know, and it was like, holy crap, like now we're serving much bigger files and that's great, except we were here to help small businesses. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to create some sort of educational programming that would really deliver for them and allow them to still get what they need, but at great value. So we launched on Boxing Day, the Timbership, which is a This Is Marketing membership. Very clever, I know.
So we started, I love it.
We started with Timberships, and we're in the middle of doing our first sort of 3-month cohort of that, and we'll start again in April. The first session is with Steve Murphy and I. So Steve has agreed. He did the first one. Now he's going to come back in April in person to do the next one. So Steve has agreed to do this. He gets approached all the time for stuff like this, but he agreed to do this one because of what I'm trying to do. What we do with Steve on that first day is we really dig into the way people think information moves versus how it actually moves. Because if you're going to make decisions over 3 months about your marketing, it helps to understand that like your Facebook post isn't going to cut it. You know what I mean? Like you really need to cut through the noise and tell a story. So it starts with Steve. He's the first day long guest. We do a full day long workshop, and then we do 2 full days of brand development work with brands. And then it breaks down into several additional sessions. We do 3 full days of just fix your website. So it's like hands-on. A bunch of people from our team are accessible to you, and we help you fix a bunch of stuff. Again, this is a long answer, but I want small businesses to hear this because it will help them. And now we're doing it, and like the reviews are like, oh my God, this actually made a difference, which is what we were trying to do. So 3 full days of just like fixing things on your website, 3 full days of learning how to do and setting up all your email marketing, multiple days around media buying, brand strategy, writing a marketing strategy, and how to write a marketing strategy that you can reuse and reuse and reuse. So it's like a really interesting and affordable program. Targeted specifically for small brands, small businesses, that just drives a ton of value. So it's really close to my heart because we kind of ended up walking away from that group mm-hmm. because of who we ended up serving, and I've wanted to get back to it. And so it's been really nice to be sitting with small business owners again and helping them. And so this program is, it'll relaunch again in April. So you can go to our website and find out information, but that one's particularly close to the heart. I don't know what else I would say. Thanks for listening. But that piece, if I'm going to promo something, it would be that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called The Timbership. Google it. Hopefully you'll find it if we did our SEO right.
Well, we'll promote it for sure on our channels. Yeah, yeah, that's amazing.
That is mm-hmm. awesome. And like I said at the beginning, thank you so much for having us here. And we're so excited to be, you know, recording season 3 at This Is Marketing. So yeah. Thank you.
It's great
to
have you.
Recorded by This Is Marketing, unblending branding since 2015.